Just short of 2 weeks ago, a man with a German accent showed up in Malforsch. The Brodies were brutally murdered. I traced the man back here to New York. He was using a fake address, but I managed to link him to a small brownstone at 428 East End Avenue. I did a little poking around. The building is in the heart of the old German-speaking area of Yorkville, and it's been owned by the same company since 1940, a real estate holding company. And it appears he's got a yacht moored at the boat basin, a huge one. I followed him from the brownstone to the yacht. Another nod from Corey. She wondered when he was going to want some information from her in return. "So?" she said. "So, I believe this Pendergast, whom you seem to know so much about, is the key to the whole thing." "No doubt. This is the big case he's been working on." An awkward pause. "That doesn't seem likely to me."
"What do you mean?"
"An FBI agent working a case doesn't blow up a bar and sink a bunch of boats, not to mention burn down a drug lab in the swamp. No, this is extracurricular."
"That's possible. He often investigates on a freelance basis."
"This was not an investigation. This was retribution, reckoning. This man Pendergast, I believe he's the mastermind behind the whole operation."
She stared at him.
"Mastermind of what?"
"The Brody killings, the drug smuggling operation, if that's what it is. Something big and highly illegal is going on here. That much is obvious.
Now, hold on. You're calling Pendergast a drug lord, or maybe even a murderer? Let us say I strongly suspect his involvement. Everything that's happened looks to me like drugs, and this FBI agent is up to his neck in it."
Corey stood up abruptly, her chair clattering to the floor.
"Are you some kind of nutcase?" she said in a loud voice.
"Sit down, please."
"I will not sit down. Pendergast selling drugs?" Her tone of disgust and disbelief was turning heads in the crowded restaurant. She didn't care. Betterton cringed under this outburst. "Will you be quiet? Pendergast is one of the most honest men you'll ever meet. You aren't even fit to lick his shoes." She saw Betterton flushing with mortification. Now she had the riveted attention of the entire restaurant. Several waiters and waitresses were hurrying over. There was something almost gratifying about it. Her long frustration at Pendergast's disappearance, her anger at being led to believe he was dead, seemed to coalesce and find a target in Betterton.
"You call yourself a reporter?" she cried. "You couldn't report your way out of a douchebag. Pendergast saved my life. He's been putting me through college for your information. And don't think there's anything between us either, because he's the most decent man alive, you asswipe."
"Excuse me, miss." A waiter was flapping his hands in a panic, as if to wave her away by magic.
"Don't miss me. I'm on my way out."
She turned and looked at the horrified crowd in the restaurant. "What, you don't like foul language? Go back to Dubuque." She flounced out of the restaurant, exited onto 7th Avenue, and there, amid the lunchtime crowds, managed to regain her breath and her equilibrium. This was serious. It seemed Pendergast was in some kind of trouble, maybe deep trouble. But he'd always handled trouble before, she knew. She had made him a promise to leave this alone, and she intended to keep it.
Chapter 55. Constance sat in the rear of the private car speeding up Madison Avenue. She had been mildly surprised by an exchange in German between Dr. Poole and the driver of the vehicle, but Poole had given her no explanation of the plans he and Pendergast had put together for their reunion. She felt an almost overwhelming eagerness to see Pendergast and the inside of the Riverside Drive mansion again. Judson Esterhazy, a.k.a. Dr. Poole, sat beside her, his tall, aristocratic frame and finely chiseled features set into sharp relief by the noontime sun. The escape had gone without a hitch. exactly as planned. She felt badly for Dr. Felder, of course, and realized this would be a blot on his career, but Pendergast's safety overshadowed all else. She glanced at Esterhazy. Despite the family connection, there was something she didn't like about him. It was his body language, the arrogant look of triumph on his face. If the truth be told, she hadn't liked him from the start. There was some quality in his manner, his way of speaking, that aroused her instinctual suspicion. No matter, she folded her hands, determined to help Pendergast in any way she could. The car slowed. Through the smoked windows, she noticed them turning east on 92nd Street. "Where are we going?" she asked. "Just a temporary stop while preparations for your, final destination are completed." Constance did not at all like his turn of phrase. "My final destination?" "Yes," Esterhazy's arrogant smile widened. "Vengeance, you see, is where it will end."
"Excuse me?"
"I quite like the sound of that," Esterhazy said. "Yes, vengeance is where it will end." She stiffened.
"And Pendergast?"
"Never mind about Pendergast." His brusqueness, the way he almost spat out the name, sent a prickle of alarm through Constance.
"What are you talking about?"
Esterhazy laughed harshly. "Don't you realize it yet? You haven't been rescued. You've been kidnapped." He turned to her in one smooth motion, and before she could react, she felt a hand clamp around her mouth and smelled the sudden, sweetish stench of chloroform. Slowly, consciousness returned out of a drowsy fog. Constance waited while she recovered her wits. She was tied to a chair, blindfolded and gagged. Her ankles were bound as well. Gradually, she became aware of her surroundings, the musty smell of the room, the faint sounds in the house. It was a small room, bare except for an empty bookshelf, a dusty table, a bed frame, and the chair she was tied to. Someone was moving around below, Esterhazy, no doubt, and she could hear traffic noises from outside. The first thing she felt was a flood of self-recrimination. Foolishly, stupidly, and unforgivably, she'd allowed herself to be duped. She had cooperated in her own abduction. Careful to keep her breathing under control, she began to take stock. She was tied, no, taped, to a chair. But when she wiggled her hands,